Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a, thankfully, it's that time of year again, edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. I'm going to tell you, I really don't know where 2024 has gone. It's been a pretty good year for your boy, but man, I just don't know where it's gone. We're left with sort of the last quarter of the year, and damn it, if that's not the best time of year. Fall is just glorious in and of itself, and then of course football season, and what an exciting season Alabama football has in store for all of us. It's new and unique, obviously, without Coach Saban, so there's a lot more unknown and a lot more excitement, maybe energy. I'm still going to say high expectations, but they're tempered a little bit, and they're different. What a transition to Kalen DeBoer. A-Day was certainly phenomenal, and we've spent some time earlier in the year talking about that. A little bit of time over the summer, talking, sort of building up for the season. And I tell you, there's a lot of excitement. It's a great transition. Kalen DeBoer, I don't think we could have hired a better coach. Alabama could not have. And the transition from Saban, a defensive-minded head coach, 17 years at Alabama, to DeBoer, more of an offensive-minded head coach. It's the right transition. It's the right replacement in this era, for this time, where the sport, sort of where the sport lives. And looking forward to jumping in and doing a pair of preview shows. We're going to do an offensive show, and then we'll flip the field and come back and do a defensive show. So two sort of pods coming out to you. We're going to spend a little bit of time as we walk through each of the position groups, kind of like we do in the preseason. We're going to talk through two deep and maybe a little bit more. So Charlie, get your poster board ready. And we're going to give grades for each of the positions. And then we're going to talk some predictions. Some of the predictions, probably, you know, low-hanging fruit, nothing, no necessarily hot takes. And then I think some interesting, maybe intriguing predictions around other positions. So why don't we go ahead and jump in, and let's do what we do. We're going to start at the quarterback position, and probably an intriguing position for lots of reasons, but very little intrigue in who the starter is going to be. Jalen Milroe is returning. As Alabama fans, we're thankful that that he's back at the helm. And I think if you're Jalen Milroe, you have to view this as sort of a prolonged Christmas morning this season will be. It's the first time in his career, certainly his collegiate career, where he's playing an offense that's designed for him. We saw Bill O'Brien when Milroe came in for injury. There was really no scheming for him. And we saw Alabama start the season almost hoping that Ty Simpson would win the job because there was no scheming specifically for Milroe until after the Southern Florida game, until after Alabama almost threw the entire season away. And then it was sort of a slow ramp, a slow progression. I think Milroe hit sort of an inflection point maybe two-thirds of the way through the season. And boy, if he can pick up his performance from maybe the Tennessee game and carry it forward, I think the roof is not the ceiling, right? in terms of what Milroe can provide. to Alabama fans. So clearly he's the one. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. We're doing a two deep here. Ty Simpson's going to be the number two. Again, I think that's a foregone conclusion. We do think, and we do hear, and we do see reports that Ty Simpson is playing lights out, practicing lights out, that he may be a player that, and this will be true of many players. We're not picking on Ty. But with Saban's approach no longer sort of ruling the day, and maybe a kinder, gentler approach, that Ty Simpson is one of the players that's going to benefit from that. So that's, I think, going to be super exciting. I think, you know, I want to talk about Simpson and Milroe, but let's talk about Milroe just a little bit. We mentioned that this may be Christmas morning for him. It's the first offense really designed for him, and that's that just by itself is Alabama fans we should be excited for. Only once last season, in one game, did Milroe complete more than 20 passes, throw more than 30 passes, and accrue more than 300 yards passing. And that was against Texas A&M in something of a shootout game. Milroe struggled the following week against Arkansas, but really, we mentioned the Tennessee game. Milroe really came into his own in that game and really sort of transitioned into a weapon, not just a game manager and certainly not a liability. There was always a question, but at that point, he transitioned into a weapon. And for my stance, for my position, each week after that, I just was more and more comfortable. I let go of that feeling that he's going to cost us one along the way. And he just played better and better and better as the season went on. I think if Milroe can start somewhere near that point with this offseason coming back, fall camp, full 100% confidence in him from the coaching staff, I think that he can start at a progress level. And if he starts about where he left off in the Tennessee game, lights are out in terms of what his season could bring. Let's talk a little bit about you know, his emergence during the season last year. There were multiple times on the pod last year, and I'll call out specifically the Kentucky game and the SEC championship game against Georgia, where he had Bryce Young-like plays, did Milroe. And that's something going into the season last year I probably would not have predicted. If he can have one of those a week this next season, and I think he's has potential for even more than that, then his numbers can be quite incredible. Milroe finished with 2,800 passing yards last season. I think he can add 1,000 to that, and I think he can reach for 4,000 yards passing. Now, that'll be a feat, but I think it's on the table for him. It's accessible. It's available to him. Milroe had 531 yards rushing, which accounts for 44 sacks. So there was a lot of loss yardage there. I won't call him a 1,000-yard rusher, but I think Milroe can reach 800 yards rushing. I really do believe that. Even just cutting the sacks down will buoy that number. And if he has more of a free green light to run, which I do think he will, those two things conspire together to come up with 250 yards or 270 yards pretty quickly. Milroe had 23 passing touchdowns last year. I think that number can bounce north of 30. And he had 12 rushing touchdowns last year. And I think probably that's a sweet spot. Maybe he hits 15. But if he starts to hit these numbers and cuts the sack total in half, he's lights out in terms of what he can, what Milroe can produce this season. Am I predicting those numbers necessarily? Well, I think it's more of an order of magnitude of the progression. I think he can progress mightily. And I think the numbers sort of in this direction can bear that out. Now, Ty Simpson, again, significantly improved. He's going to push Jalen and make Jalen a better player, but Ty himself is going to put up significantly better numbers than he did last year. Ty last year only attempted 20 passes and only had 179 yards of offense in the passing game. Ty Simpson's going to play a lot more than he did last season. And that's not a function of Milroe. That's a function of the coach and the game. And this is a prediction I'm going to make specifically at quarterback, because we're going to see it with our naked eye at the quarterback position more than we will at other positions. But it's a truth that we will see across the roster, across all the positions. I'm only going to make the prediction once, and I'm going to do it here at quarterback in the name of Ty Simpson. The backups, Alabama backups, will play a much larger role in 2024 than they ever did, certainly in 23, but even under Saban. Saban was notorious for having a short bench, and the tighter the game got, the bigger the opponent, the shorter the bench would get. We see that sometimes in basketball, but in football, a very physical game, when you tighten the bench, it becomes harder and harder for the players to perform week over week over week. We've seen Alabama teams in the past be a fatigued team late in the season. And I think this is something, and there's a couple factors that play again. With the transfer portal, people can just leave because they're in a bad mood. Well, you want to keep them in a good mood. You want to keep them aspiring to do better, and you want to reward them with playing time on the field. Not just the last 6 minutes in the fourth quarter when you're up by 30, but you want to work them into the game in the third quarter where they get meaningful snaps in the action. You can still rotate them back out, but you want to get them into the game early. That's going to rest your starters. It's going to make your bench happy, right? Because they can not just work every week and not play, but they can work and see the results of their efforts on the field, playing meaningful snaps in games. Ty Simpson will benefit from that, as will many players at other positions. So that's the transfer portal. It's a longer playoff. So there's more, potentially many more games that will be played. And so you want to peak at the right point of the season, because there's almost a second season when you get in the playoffs, not just one or two games, but potentially multiple, several games. And so what you want to do is have a fresh team that's peaking late in the season. So to do that, you play more players. You reduce the snap count. When I think about Milroe, it's not an exact transitive, because football and basketball are very different, but there's a term they use in basketball, which it actually fits basketball perfectly. It's minutes played. How many minutes are they playing? What's the average minutes that they're playing? Well, you can do that in basketball because it's offense and defense, and sort of it's minutes of the game. You can't really do that in football, minutes played, because there's offense and defense, and you don't play both. I guess the offensive team, the opponent could have a really big day, and that reduces the minutes that your offense is on the field. So it's not a transitive one-for-one sort of concept, but there's an idea there. I think that you can follow along with me. Jalen Milroe's minutes will be reduced. His production will go way up, and Ty Simpson will see many more minutes. He will double, maybe triple his production from 23, and that'll be certainly fun to watch. I do predict, let's see, I went through some of my predictions there with the backups will play. That's going to be universal. Ty Simpson, I think he's going to more than double his stats package from 23. And I think Milroe, look, we've said it without saying it, he's going to be a Heisman finalist. I think he was the fourth or fifth finalist last season, maybe the sixth finalist. And if I read correctly, if I remember correctly, he's one of the top two finalists from last year back this season. So he's almost has a little bit of a head start. He's got the right coach for an outstanding offensive breakout performance this season. And so I think if he puts up these kind of numbers, he's a shoe-in to be a finalist. And what a shock it would be, considering where some of the headspace of some of the fans as recently as a year ago, that Milroe could actually win it. I'm not going to go so far as to predict that he will, but he'll get a trip to New York in December. That I will predict. If I were to grade the quarterback position, it's an A. I'm giving it an A. I love Milroe and what he brings back. I love Ty Simpson, that he's going to be a better player. Dylan Lonergan and Austin Mack, the depth there. We'll see how the deck shuffles a year from now. But I'm excited about this lineup, about this roster, and the quarterback position at Alabama for 24. The running back position, look, what do you want to say about the running back position? This is the easiest sort of rundown that there is. We're going to go two deep, and it's sort of a one and a two at running back position, which is not unusual for that position. Justice Hayes and Jam Miller. Just go back and listen to the podcast 2 years ago about some of the predictions and some of the hopefulness and some of the comments we had about GM Miller. I love this kid. He's supremely talented, and he's a weapon in the passing game. Just ask LSU and Georgia about that last season. If you saw A-Day, he certainly had some success there. And Justice Haynes is a phenomenal running back as well. In fact, 2 years ago at A-Day, I think he had three or four touchdowns, and it was an incredible amount of action that that he received when Saban was still at the helm. I think we've got two running backs that are head and shoulders above anything else that maybe we've seen in a while. I think Alabama, with the tandem, has the best running back room in the conference, maybe in the country. And that's going to be an interesting thing, to see. These players are already talented, but when we're going to talk about offensive line and improved offensive line, the potential out of this unit, I think, is massive. And the third running back, Richard Young, redshirt freshman, he had the best run of the day at A-Day. And so he is ready to burst out onto the scenes, and he's going to be in the rotation as well. If I'm grading this position, it's an A+. I don't think there's another grade that you can give the Alabama running back room. In terms of prediction, I don't think Alabama will have a 1,000-yard rusher, and that's because it's a two-headed monster. Alabama may well have two 750-yard rushers. And again, I think two of the best backs in the, certainly in the conference and potentially in the nation.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's most experienced active investment managers. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Capital Client Group, Inc.
Let's go to wide receiver, and gosh, there's just so many names. There's so much depth to talk about at the wide receiver position. The depth is just impeccable as well. It's amazing. It's incredible. But it is also, to counterbalance that, it's a little bit of a show-me situation. There's a whole lot of names, but there's limited experience. There's limited, we've seen them do that, and they're coming back to do it again. Although there's a hell of a lot of names that are poised to break out. So I'm going to give you two deep, and then I'm going to sort of bend the rules on that just a little bit. It's what we do. I'm going to go my first deep, I'm going to go three, and then my two deep, I'm going to go four. So I'm going to give you seven, and then I'm going to give you a litany of names that I'm excited about even further down the list. I think to start the season, the number one receiver is going to be Jeremy Bernard, a transfer from Washington. If you watch the A-Day game, he was lights out. He was phenomenal, a physical receiver, go get ball. And I had an opportunity or took the opportunity over the summer to watch some highlight packages and film breakdowns of Washington. And more than one sort of reviewer talking about the offense made the comment that, look at Jeremy Bernard. He's not one of their top guys. He's their third receiver, but look at how they use him. A lot of jet sweeps, a lot of end arounds in the special teams, and then working him the ball within the confines of the offense. And so it was clear, and the point that the commentator was making that I'm sort of stealing and borrowing here, is that the coaching staff knew they had something special. The Washington coaching staff last year knew they had something very special in Jeremy Bernard, and they worked him into the offense where they could because their top two receivers were just outstanding. And so the third guy, he's so good, we got to almost manufacture opportunities for him. And that's exactly what they did. It's also a testament to Jeremy Bernard. As soon as the Washington staff landed in Tuscaloosa to take over the Alabama program, one of the first transfers was Bernard, and they were very happy to have him. DeBoer and crew were very happy to have Jeremy Bernard. So that's a high endorsement for Bernard, and certainly seeing him at A-Day. To me, that was a revelation. I thought, this guy's going to be pretty good, but let's just see it. And he went out very early in A-Day and was phenomenal. Had a sort of possess the ball sort of mindset. I talked about last year that Jermaine Burton reminded me of a prior receiver, but there was a rawness rawness to the game. Jeremy Bernard is more of a polished version of that, and I look forward to seeing him really have a phenomenal season. You could probably throw a blanket over Kobe Prentiss and Kendrick Law at sort of the number two receiver. So maybe I've got a top four and a second three. But I think both of those guys, a little shorter, but very physical, very willing receivers, and I think they're going to be phenomenal for Alabama. Kobe Prentiss is who I put in I put in my top three, and I'm super excited about him. I think he's ready to sort of leapfrog forward. And Kendrick Law is more of a big-bodied, fast, very physical potential. And I expect that he will have a big season as well. And I do inch Ryan Williams into my top three. I know he is a true freshman this season and actually reclassified. He should be gearing up for a senior year in high school, but he reclassified and at 17 years old is going to be a true freshman at Alabama. Now, I'm going to tell you, he may not be a day one starter, but before the season is over, he's going to be a starter, and he, I think, has the potential to be phenomenal. Generational talent is what you hear. We need to be careful sort of throwing that around, especially with some of the receivers that Alabama has enjoyed the last few years. But I think Ryan Williams is going to write his name in that level of Crimson Flame. I think he's going to be a star, potentially electric. And again, in my notes, he may be the best receiver by the end of the year. I think that's true. If we start looking at you know, who in the two deep, I've already mentioned Kendrick Law, Caleb Odom, a five-star tight end that is going to play at the wide receiver position. He's 6'5", 225. He's going to be phenomenal. He's already made some catches in practice going up. And imagine 6'5", but he's leaping full extension, grabbing a one-handed ball out of the air. I think that type of catch radius down by the goal line, I think, is going to be phenomenal. And, you know, we've talked about tall receivers and catch radius and weapons at the goal line. Those are the things you say. And there was a stretch, especially the first half of Saban's career, where Alabama always had a tall receiver. And it never materialized. It never really became the weapon that we thought it could and should. And you always see, you know, watch college football games, watch pro games, you see that type of athleticism, that type of player being leveraged. And for whatever reason, it never really materialized at Alabama, which to me was always interesting. It's going to materialize under Kalen DeBoer. It is. It just is. And Caleb Odom is going to be the first sort of beneficiary of that. It's going to be, I think, really exciting to see how he matures and how he develops. And I love the idea of moving him to wide receiver so that you can play him. He's going to line up on the edge. He doesn't have to go against a 280-pound, 270-pound SEC defensive end and sort of get his brains bashed in from the tight end position. Split him out wide, create a mismatch, get him experience on the field. And if a year into the program, he puts on 15, 20 pounds and has a bigger body to play tight end, then move him back down. But to sort of legalistically leave him at tight end because that's what he played at high school, and then he can't find the field as a result, I think that's a disservice to the program. I think it's a disservice to the young man. And I love the creativity. This coaching staff says, we're going to put the guy out there where he can play because he has the talent to contribute. And we're going to extract from him as much of that as we absolutely can. So I'm excited about Caleb Odom in that regard. Emmanuel Henderson, I think he's a former five-star. He needs to stay healthy. This is a kid that gets all the high marks and all the high reviews. And I know some Alabama fans that just absolutely love the kid. And he struggles to find the field consistently. He'll have big days in A-Day. He'll demonstrate some capability. He is authentically one of the fastest players on the team, and I do think one of the most athletic players on the team. He just struggles to stay healthy. As a true freshman, he kind of bounced. He was a running back in high school, and so he came to Alabama as a wide receiver, but then he came, but for depth purposes, we moved him back to the receiver core. And so we sort of lost a year as developing as a wide receiver because we put him with the running backs. And then the next year, it seems like he was injured, and he really has just never found his footing. And I think if Emmanuel Henderson, he's been a wide receiver now for a couple of years, if he can stay healthy, he can, if he can get his sort of his traction, his footing under him, and gosh, with this coaching staff, I think he has the opportunity to really be a breakout player for the Tide. Could he be one of the top three receivers on the roster? He absolutely could. I do think there's, I think there's about five guys that could be the top three receiver, and Emmanuel Henderson is on that list. I think Shepard, the wide receiver coach, I think he's the poster child for the improved coaching staff that Alabama has, and we've talked about, I know we spent a good amount of time on our Zoom calls, our virtual tailgates, talking about the coaching staff. We all love Saban. Saban's a brilliant coach. He's the GOAT. He's going to go down that way. But in the last few years, he has struggled to maintain a top-flight coaching staff. And Saban talked about it. Everyone would come in and say, how long are you going to be here? Can you guarantee 3 to 5 years? I've got kids starting high school. I need some stability. And Saban couldn't promise it, wouldn't promise it. For all the reasons, when you're 68, 69, 70, 71 years old, those are hard commitments to make. And as a result, it's harder to have coaching staff. It's hard to recruit the best coaches to come when they realize they may only have a one-year shot. And then they've got families to manage and tend to as well. I think this coaching staff with DeBoer, the feeling I get, and I'm going to go on a little bit of a coaching staff tangent here, but the feeling I get with DeBoer and Womack and Sheridan and just all the guys, there seems like a core group that's, many of them work together at Washington. Some of them have worked together, interacted in other places. Kane Womack and one of the other coaches early in the hiring process, they said, hey, we knew if we ever got a chance to sort of get the band together and work together, we wanted to. And so when you have that mindset, when you have those relationships in the industry, and you land at an Alabama, and you who's a top flight program, still in the playoffs last year, right? You come to Alabama and you sort of get the band together. I feel like these coaches every day realize right now, I am embarking on what will be the greatest days of my life. There's an energy that they just seem to exude that they are entering into this era of their career with full knowledge up front that when they retire, they will look back as this being the highlight of their coaching career. And they go to work every day with that passion, that vision to make it real, to make that true. And I just find that to be exciting. And I think the players are sensing that. No one has said that. No one's going to say that. But the more that they're in interviews and the more I hear and read and watch, I just think that's where their headspace is. And damn, that's pretty dang exciting. So what do we got here? If I were to grade the wide receiver position, I haven't finished running down. I mentioned Kendrick Law. Cole Adams, I think he's a sticky guy. I think he's going to always sort of be around the edges this next season. I think he's going to get a number of catches. I think he's going to be a third down. And I'm not just saying that because he's the proverbial white receiver, lunch pail kind of guy, whatever you say, hard nose, knows the playbook, all that kind of stuff. He is a legit track athlete and was a highly regarded wide receiver coming out of high school. So I think Cole Adams has an opportunity to just be outstanding, and I think he's going to find opportunities sort of around the edges, and he will contribute for the Tide as well. There's a handful of freshmen, Amari Jefferson, Rico Scott, and Bubba Hampton, that are just have the potential to be super exciting. This may not be their year, but if one of them sort of leapfrogged forward into sort of a seven-man rotation, it wouldn't surprise me either. And then Jaron Hamilton didn't play a lot last year, so he's a redshirt true freshman. I think he has a lot of potential. He has shown some flashes. And then Jalen Hale, who really started to emerge as a true freshman last season, unfortunately suffered pretty catastrophic injury, and he's going to be out for the year. There's some talk that he may be able to come back late in the season. late October, sort of November. I guess we'll see how that plays out. We certainly root for his health. If I were to grade the wide receiver position, I kind of want to give it a B. I kind of want to give it an incomplete, and I think there's some extra credit out there. When we look at, well, we haven't seen Bernard at Alabama sort of be the number one guy, and Ryan Williams, at least 17 years old, and Kalen Odom is a true freshman, and Emmanuel Henderson is, you know, injury, and Cole Adams, well, we don't really know what we have there, and Kobe and Kendrick, you can lead yourself down that path of conversation. I have too much optimism in this unit to go all the way down that path, plus just the numbers. Holy cow, there's too many of them for them all to crap out. I think there's enough for this to be a very strong unit, I'm excited about it. Now, if I'm going to make a prediction, some of this prediction, I guess, is fairly predictable, but the wide receiver staff or the wide receiver core really starts as a committee. I think there's six or seven folks that can contribute, but stars absolutely will emerge. Ryan Williams will be one. Jeremy Bernard will be another. There'll be a third sort of star, and that may be the hardest prediction to make is it's which one of those players. I think this will be the deepest productive set of wide receivers maybe in the country. I think there's maybe seven guys that can have 30 plus catches. Talking about distributing the ball, making the defenders sort of uneasy in terms of who they're defending, always having fresh wide receivers on the field. I think this is I think those are characteristics of this wide receiver core. So as Alabama fans, we absolutely should be excited about that. Let's talk about the tight end position. And, I feel like there's a little bit of rewind. Things that I want to say about the tight end position that I will say about the tight end position, I have said about the tight end position. But I think there's a couple of neat twists that we can talk about as well. Look, C.J. Dupree is going to be the number one tight end. But what I love about the tight end room is it's so fantastically versatile. And so, you know, let me know if you've heard this before, but Robbie Utes is more fullback than he is H-back, or certainly more tight end, but we group him under the tight end. So there's versatility there. And then Washington transfer Josh Kuvas is more of a wide receiver threat, I think, than sort of an inline tight end. So C.J. Dupree is more the traditional inline. Robbie Utes is more of the traditional H fullback. And then Josh Kuvas is more of a wide receiver style, just a big-bodied, overgrown sort of wide receiver type tight end. And so I like that versatility. Now, that's my pecking order. I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, Dupree, Utes, Kuvas. But they could rotate based on situational needs, maybe even. And then I think the next sort of two deep, or the next sort of batch of players, Danny Lewis, Ty Lockwood, and Jay Lindsey. Lindsey being a true freshman. Danny Lewis is the one to watch. I think I'm gonna jump forward maybe to a prediction, but if we go out into the future and look back to this tight end room, we may realize that Danny Lewis was the best tight end of that group. He still has a couple of years of eligibility, and I think he's going to develop into something. He's more of a traditional inline, but I think he's more athletic at the position. And let's go predictions. Alabama is going to play fewer tight ends, but they'll have greater tight end production. So what do we mean by that? Alabama, under Saban, it was not unusual to run two and three tight ends. We've had multiple instances where we've called out the last couple of seasons where Alabama played seven tight ends in the game. I'm not counting special teams. I'm saying lined up in the game, not all at once, but at different times of the game, Alabama would rotate a very deep tight end room, and as many as seven different tight ends would see the field. I think, and again, a lot of 23 personnel with three tight ends. Again, maybe one split out, one in line, and then the H-back sort of fullback in position. And they would motion and do different things. But Alabama played a lot of tight ends on the field concurrently. I think this offense under Kalen DeBoer is going to play more one tight end set. It's going to be a lot more 11 personnel, three wides, one running back, one tight end. So we're going to see more three wides, more four wides, which probably takes a tight end off the field. And then, you know, you get to sort of the five wide receiver set. But we're going to see a lot of three and four wide receivers, which is going to take tight ends off the field. And so there'll just be fewer tight end snaps available than under this offensive regime than there was previously. However, last year at Washington, their tight end, Jake Westover, had 433 yards, 46 receptions, and four touchdowns. And he's one of the top, he's actually one of the top tight ends in Washington history in terms of production. Contrast that with C.J. Dupree. He had 187 yards, 11 receptions, and zero touchdowns. I think quite easily C.J. can double his production. That would get him at 374, still short of Westover's 433, and 22 receptions, which would get him still well under Westover's 46 receptions. And then if he throws up touchdowns, he had zero last year. So I think C.J. easily doubles his production. I don't know if he gets all the way to Westover's level of production, although he is capable of it. But I think C.J. doubles his tight end, his production at the tight end position. So that is my prediction there. All right, let's move on to the offensive line. And I think there's a couple interesting things to step through here. Let me give you my two deep, just running left to right. So left tackle, Caden Proctor. Left guard, Tyler Booker. Center, Parker Brailsford. Right guard, Jaden Roberts. And right tackle, Wilkin Formby. I think the backups, left to right, again, I'll just run through Elijah Pritchard, Olas Alanen, Gino Vandermark, Rock Montgomery, and Miles McVay rounding up at the right tackle. A lot of folks are mixed on that right tackle position. Is it going to be Elijah Pritchard or is it going to be Wilkin Formby? I think Elijah Pritchard done messed up. I think Elijah Pritchard had all the time in the world to assert himself as the best tackle on the group, of the group. We knew Caden was coming back, but it was unable to participate in spring drills. And that created an opportunity for Elijah Pritchard to really step up and put down the gauntlet. And instead of that, Wilkin Formby did the same thing. In fact, he did it, whereas I think Pritchard at the same level did not. Formby said, look, by default, I will get to compete in the top two because Caden's not here. Interestingly enough, Elijah Pritchard was competing at the left tackle spot and Formby was competing at the right tackle spot. So he had a little bit of sort of a leg up in that regard. I think Wilkin Formby is the guy that when you open the door, when you give him a chance, you won't be able to unseat him. He's gonna dig in and entrench himself at the position. And to such a degree, it's like a tick. You gotta almost cut him out. He's gonna be so entrenched at the position that Elijah Pritchard will not be able to upend him from the position. I do think if they were to run sort of obstacle courses, Elijah Pritchard's probably the better athlete, and maybe has better full upside at the position. But Formby's a guy who is sound. He knows the playbook. He knows his responsibilities. He's going to be very, very tough to upend at the position. I love Coach Kapilovic. I like his energy and some of the interviews that I've seen from him. I think he's going to be a significant amount of addition to the program. I think Elijah and Gino, and I'm not mad at Elijah Pritchard. I just think Formby's going to beat him out. Elijah and Gino Vandermark are going to be the sixth and seventh linemen. They're going to be the swing linemen. So Elijah Pritchard will be ready to go at either of the tackle positions. Again, we're going to rotate and play more guys. So Elijah Pritchard will get his snaps. And Gino Vandermark will sort of be the swing lineman in the middle, guard to center guard. He would rotate there as well. So I've got Vandermark is the backup center. But he would be the first guard in at any of the interior positions. I'll say this about Gino. I think he demonstrates roster management at a supreme level. Courtney Morgan and Kalen DeBoer Bringing in Gino Vandermark, I think, is phenomenal. Vandermark played for Kapovolik at Michigan State last year, and people were going to say, well, wait a second, we hired the O-line coach from Baylor. Well, he was at Baylor for about 3 weeks, and the opportunity to come to Alabama emerged. As Seth McLaughlin and James Brockmeyer, as they transferred out, Alabama really had no other plan, had no backup at the center position. And so going to get Gino, I think, was a stroke of genius. Bringing him in, he can back up the guard positions. So all of a sudden, you know, one guy comes in and potentially gives you depth at multiple positions, has experience with the O-line coach. I just think that's phenomenal. I also think that, you know, you read tea leaves, right? You read between the lines. The way the coaching staff handled Parker Brelsford through A-Day really sort of reveals what the coaching staff thinks about Parker. Parker participated some in A-Day, but not or some in spring, but very little. And they just said he was out for personal reasons and didn't elaborate, but kept saying, it's going to be okay. He's going to be here in the fall. And so you can only say that if you really, truly know what you have. And it certainly does seem that the coaching staff did. Brelsford is, all reports, playing very, very well across the offensive line and looks to be a very, very solid center. I do think Rock Montgomery could play center, but you'd prefer him as the third center and the second guard. And so, again, it's just Vandermark at the center position, I think, is the right answer. And again, played for Kapovolik at Michigan State. Prediction, I'm going to say this is the top five offensive line nationally. I'm not going to go so far as to predict that they win the Joe Moore Award, although they're keen competitors for it. Give Georgia a lot of sort of credit in that regard. But this is going to be a really, really good offensive line. And I haven't even really talked about some of the players coming back. Caden Proctor was certainly a win coming back in the transfer portal. He's going to have a level of motivation. He has seen what it's like not at Alabama at the collegiate level. He's going to come back and as a sophomore, build upon his performance last year. And Tyler Booker and Jaden Roberts are just a pair of the best guards you're going to find in the country. So this is a super talented offensive line with some emerging depth, a very strategic move in bringing in Vandermark. I'm really excited about this offensive line. The grade that I give it is an A-. So thanks for listening in. We certainly hope you enjoyed it. That's what we have in terms of an offensive preview. If you did enjoy it, hey, leave us a review. We love the 5-star reviews. Leave us a comment. Leave us questions. Send us questions. We absolutely love it. And consider joining the podcast support team. I'm going to tell you, it's some of the best folks that you would ever care to meet in terms of just high-quality individuals and Bama fans. I mean, you know, except that one guy, but, you know, we don't talk about him very often. Hey, until next time, roll tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
All right.
Of course. Roll Tide.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.